Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelsang. As part of our Smithsonian Associates Inside Science Art of Living series, our guest today on the Not Old Better Show is Dr. Joseph Ledoux. Joseph Ledoux is a neuroscientist who is primarily focused on the biology of emotion and memory, especially related to the brain and fear and anxiety. Why do we react the way we do when in danger? Why do we sometimes wrestle with levels of anxiety that don't quite reflect the situation at hand?
You may freeze or you may take off running. And these things are designed by evolution to keep an organism alive. And this is not just true of the human organism, but of many animals. In fact, all animals have to respond to danger in some way or another. So evolution is doing the thinking for you. And by the time you realize any of this is happening, it's already in play.
That, of course, is our guest today, Dr. Joseph Ledoux, who is part of the acoustic duo So We Are with Irish singer-songwriter Colin Dempsey. We're listening to their song My Mind's Eye right now, and following our Q&A, Ledoux and Dempsey, So We Are, will perform some of their music for us live, putting a new beat on their exploration of what makes us us. For more information, check out the end of the show for details or our website for dates, ticket information, and location for the Smithsonian Associates program. But please join me in welcoming to the Not Old Better Show via Skype, Dr. Joseph Ledoux and Colin Dempsey. Joseph Ledoux, Colin Dempsey, what a pleasure it is to talk to both of you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And I know we're going to get into the music in just a moment, but Joseph Ledoux, I want to start at this very basic level with regard to the subject of the presentation at the Smithsonian Associates coming up, this subject of fear, which we've all experienced. Why is it that we react the way we do when we perceive danger? Why don't we just stop and calm ourselves and kind of think it through, make a plan, execute it? It's more complicated, right?
Well, whenever we're in danger, we activate what's traditionally called the fight-flight system. It'll do for our purposes here because most people understand what that is. It's an automatic, innate system that has been put into your brain by evolution to detect and respond to danger. And so when we're in a dangerous situation like that, the system is activated, stress hormones are released, blood pressure and heart rate go up, breathing rates change, your muscles tense. You may freeze or you may take off running. And these things are designed by evolution to keep an organism alive. And this is not just true of the human organism, but of many animals. In fact, all animals have to respond to danger in some way or another. So evolution is doing the thinking for you. And by the time you realize any of this is happening, it's already in play. And so your conscious mind then begins to assess what's going on. And that's a whole different story. That's when we begin to feel fear.
I like that evolution is doing the thinking for me. And I know sometimes, again, at least for me, I sense these levels of anxiety, but maybe I don't match those levels with the actual situation at hand. Maybe I overreact. Maybe I don't fully grasp the level of danger. So why is that?
It's a blunt tool. It's there to treat a dangerous thing as a dangerous thing and to generate a kind of generic response. Again, these things are built in by evolution. So it has given this to be maximally effective in the maximum number of situations. So it's probably going to be generating a larger response than necessary sometimes. The reason it's hard to control is because it is an innate system. It's pre-wired, and so once it's set off, it just happens. And we can't simply just say, okay, I'm not going to freeze. I mean, Charles Darwin did a test on himself. He went to the zoo in London and put his face up against the terrarium where this, like, poisonous snake was living. And every time he would do that, the snake would strike at the glass. And he tried with all of his might to resist pulling back, but he couldn't do it because it's just built into the brain.
So I think I'm starting to understand this. And with regard to this idea of overreaction, I know when my own heart rate starts to increase, and I certainly can feel the perspiration. you know, I know that there are these behavioral responses, but in some of the research that I did on you, you suggest that the flight or fight responses that are present in the amygdala might just be confused emotions. So help me understand kind of that part of it, because there's a nuance there maybe I'm missing.
Right. So it's not so much that that the amygdala confuses fight-flight responses with emotions, but that people do. That when we often talk about, the amygdala has become, you know, famous for being the brain's fear center, and I'm partly responsible for that idea, but I think it's the wrong way to describe it. And I've really often tried to make this point clearer, but so many people have you know, the amygdala and fear has become like a cultural meme. So many people know about it. It's hard to get past this this confusion that I think even a lot of scientists have, which is that there's a difference between what there's a difference in the brain systems that are involved in these automatic detection and response to threats, and the brain systems that generate our conscious feelings of fear. So the amygdala system is the amygdala circuitry detects the threat and produces these hardwired responses like freezing, flight, blood pressure and heart rate changes, stress hormone release. These are all part of the evolutionarily generated system that keeps you alive in a dangerous situation. Okay. At the same time, if you have a brain that can be conscious of its own activities, you can become aware that when this brain system is activated and you see yourself freezing and notice your heart is beating fast, that you are experiencing a state of fear. That's a conscious experience, and that's not bubbling up out of the amygdala. That is being actively assembled in the higher centers of the brain, in the cortex, particularly the prefrontal cortex, by that kind of knowledge or understanding of the situation that you're in. So it's a completely different thing, and I think it's possibly something that is uniquely human. It's certainly the way what we call fear is not the same thing as what you see in an animal that is defending itself against danger. That animal may experience something, probably does, but it has very little to do with what we call fear, because fear is tied into our culture, and fear is different in different cultures. It's tied into our language. An animal without the 37 words that we have in the English language for different gradations or kinds or variations of fear and anxiety can't possibly have the subtle understanding of fear and anxiety that we do. Without those language terms, it's not quite the same. So we can make a distinction between fear and anxiety and panic and horror and terror, trepidation, consternation, all sorts of things in the English language, and other languages have other terms as well. So fear is an experience that we generate, as has seen other people experience fear, has seen other people and other have seen fear, anxiety on TV and movies and video games. We've read about it. So we have a large body of knowledge about what fear is, and we draw upon that knowledge each time we interpret our situation as being one in which we're in danger. And that's how we say, oh, I'm fearful or I'm anxious. And perhaps I should talk a bit about the difference between fear and anxiety, mm-hmm. since they are also often confused. Fear is the feeling you have in the presence of a threat that is there in the here and now. A snake at your feet will elicit fear. Anxiety is a worry about something that hasn't happened yet. Anxiety was almost reclassified as a psychiatric problem as worry disorder, because worry is a key center idea in the whole concept of anxiety. So in the case of the snake, though, the fear almost immediately turns into anxiety, because you have that fear which triggers the amygdala. You have the threat triggering the amygdala's response, and then you begin to experience fear. And that is supplemented by all these hormones and other things going on as a result of the amygdala triggering it. But the amygdala is not causing it. The amygdala is just providing ingredients that are interpreted as part of the fear experience when you can put all of that together in your conscious mind. Anxiety, though, is the worry. And so as soon as you begin to, as soon as you notice that you're afraid, you start to worry about what's going to happen. In the case of the snake, will I be able to, will the snake bite me? If it bites me, will I be able to get to a doctor? Will he have the antidote? If he doesn't, will I die? If I die, what will happen to my family? On and on. So you can see how these, how worry, fear turns into worry, and worry turns into a cascade of steps that, that can never end if you really carry it out to the logical extreme. And that's why anxiety is so troubling, because it's a construction in our minds that allows us to worry about the future. It's really, anxiety is the price we pay for having a brain that can envision the future. That allows us to build buildings and write operas and do all kinds of amazing things that only humans can do, to be artists and novelists and, you know, all the things that we celebrate about a human being, because we can anticipate stuff that isn't in the here and now. But that the price we pay for that is sometimes we anticipate things that are not necessarily useful or adaptive for us. They become obsessions and compulsions and worries and anxieties, so to speak. So anxiety is the price we pay for seeing, being able to see the future or envision a future.
Thank you. That is really helpful. It's fascinating. Interesting to know the distinction between fear and anxiety. So then, Joseph Ledoux, give us quickly the implications from this understanding in terms of treating these emotions.
Well, I think one of the problems that we've had is that all of the treatment efforts have, especially in terms of developing medications, have been based on putting animals in test situations and changing their behavioral responses. And so the problem is that if that is not the system, that if the amygdala is not the system that is responsible for fear, but is instead just the system that is responsible for detecting and responding to threats in the kind of automatic way, then the changing those behavioral and physiological responses in the pharmaceutical lab is not necessarily going to change fear and anxiety in people when they go into the world. And this has become a real problem, because the pharmaceutical companies are all pulling out of the anxiety business because they viewed it as a failure. There have been no new classes of drugs developed since the 1960s. And I mean, there have been, you know, new variations, for example, on benzodiazepines or monoamine type drugs like SSRIs and so forth. But there have been no new medications. And so the companies are pulling out. And they think it's a failure. But I think what they've done is misperceived what they were trying to do by testing these medications in animals. What they've done is perhaps made it easier for a person with social anxiety to go to the party. In other words, just like the rat or the mouse is less timid behaviorally with these medications, the person is less timid behaviorally. It's easier for the person to get to the party, but will still feel anxious when they're there. If the person had been told it's going to be easier to get to the party, but you're still going to feel anxious, then you can kind of go in and expose yourself a little bit, step out if it's too much, go back in, expose yourself to this kind of scary, dangerous thing again. And then, you know, over time, it'll get a little easier for you. So if the person had been told that, they would have felt it was a success. But because they felt anxious when they went to the party, they feel it's a failure. The therapist feels it's a failure, and the drug company feels it's a failure, and so everybody's getting out of the business, when in fact the medication did something useful, just not the thing that they wanted it to do. So I think ultimately there's no medication that can literally change the content of a thought that goes into the making of the fear experience. And to do that, you probably have to have a social interaction, a person-to-person interaction with a therapist where you're actually talking about it. But I think the medications can be useful in paving the way for that by calming the brain down a bit, turning down the volume without necessarily being able to change the content of those experiences.
this work that you've done is so interesting and so important. Literally, Joseph Ledoux, I could talk to you for a long time. I think this will be a wonderful presentation at the Smithsonian Associates Program. Speaking, of course, of the amygdala, you're joined there by Colin Dempsey, part of your acoustic duo, So We Are, and the Amygdaloids. And I am hoping that you'll give us a song here between the two of you that touches on some of this in my mind's eye, and I think comes to my mind that you might play for us now.
Sure thing. If you look into my mind's eye, you would see the way that I cry. Deep inside my mind's eye, we had love, it was good. You were there, you understood everything, yes, everything. You can't always trust what you think you know. You can't trust what you believe. Sometimes your mind just puts on a show. It simply deceives. My mind's eye, you were mine, but my mind's eye was blind. If you look into my mind's eye, you would see the way that I cry. Deep inside my mind's eye, can't always trust what you think you know. You can't trust what you believe. Sometimes your mind just puts on a show. It simply deceives.
I'm clapping here, and I'm just thrilled. Of course, Irish singer-songwriter Colin Dempsey with Joseph Ledoux, and Joseph Ledoux is from the Center for Neural Science. I have to just tell you, Joseph Ledoux, I love these left brain, right brain combinations. Is that a fair way to put this?
Oh, that's something I love them. You know, it's a kind of pop psychology.
I'm sorry for that. I had to take that shot. So, well, Joseph Ledoux, Colin Dempsey, of course, coming up at the Smithsonian Associates Program. We're going to put links to everything, but thank you so much for joining us today. What a pleasure it was. Thanks for the song.
Thank you.
Too.
Bye-bye,
Paul.
Bye-bye, guys.
Bye.
My thanks to our guests today, Dr. Joseph Ledoux and Colin Dempsey, who will be at the Smithsonian Associates presenting the Facing Fear program Wednesday, March 7th, 2018. My thanks as well to the Smithsonian team for all they do to support our interviews. As usual, we will post links to everything, and also as usual, my thanks to you, the listeners, for joining me today. Your time is valuable, and I'm grateful you're spending some of it with me. I'm always interested in feedback, and you can leave that at iTunes, Google Play, or send me email at info@notold-better.com. Stay tuned for our next show, another great one as we talk about better, the Not Old Better Show. Thanks, everybody.